When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Welcome back, I'm Carmack and this is Combat Chronicles. You may be wondering where the regular feed has been for a couple of weeks. As I always say, if you want to keep up to date with everything Combat Chronicles related, head on over to Patreon, www.patreon.com/Combat Chronicles. Be over there for a little while. So back today, because there's a big fight to talk about and there's a big moment to talk about this past weekend. No, it's not Johnny Eblen, although everyone's saying, look, Bellator finally got a guy that could win the title in the UFC. We finally found the guy that's had the most favourable stylistic matchup possible. What I would suggest is, you know, get him to fight Robert Whittaker in the number one contenders matchup first, and that's suddenly a moot point. But of course, talking about Fedor Emelianenko, firm favourite for a very long time, finally retiring after a second loss to Ryan Bader in the first round. And quite frankly, you know, if you follow me on Twitter at CombatCR, if you don't, you already know that I was predicting this to be completely depressing. Didn't see any reason to think outside of a Hail Mary that Fedor would have a better chance of winning this time. And quite frankly, a sad way for him to go out. But there's loads of things to talk about Fedor Emelianenko, and I just want to talk about what he means to me as a fighter, what he means to MMA as a fighter, and also some little interesting quirks that maybe we don't talk about too often. As a matter of fact, let's talk about those interesting quirks straight away, because, you know, I think what everyone's sort of realised over the years is that Fedor isn't actually that big heavyweight. He never was in his prime. He certainly doesn't appear to be nowadays. I mean, you see him stood next to Chuck Liddell. I know Chuck's big and burly in his post-retirement days, but he looks massive compared to Fedor. Royce Gracie's taller than him, for fuck's sake. Josh Barnett looked gargantuan next to him. These are, you know, obviously contemporaries in terms of time. Chuck Liddell could have easily fought heavyweight, but was a light heavyweight. Royce Gracie fought at open weight, but, you know, he made, I think, did he fight Matt Hughes at 175 as catch weight? But let's be honest. Royce Gracie was, he weighed around 175 for most of his fights, but I mean, I don't even want to think about putting him in modern context, and maybe that's a conversation for another time, but not a big guy. I know height isn't everything either, but he just, you know, he looked like, Fedor just looked like a fat, smaller guy compared to him. Fedor, yes, in his prime, stronger, burlier, thicker, you know, he had bigger traps, he had bigger chest, bigger back. Certainly post-Pride, I'm not saying anything, but he just sort of become a bit podgy. And what's really strange about Fedor, as I'm going off a tangent here, is in his prime, cross-trained a lot, you know, went out to Holland to try and better his skill set, training with Ernesto Hoost and others. And, you know, definitely strike force onwards, just appeared to be a lot more one route, you know, swinging for the fences, not using his grappling. When was the last time we saw Fedor sub someone off his back or something? You know what I mean? Like, you just don't really see it anymore. Didn't really have the hips he used to have. Didn't have that explosiveness. Just a different fighter. Obviously, still had hand speed, still powerful, chin eroded over the years, and, you know, we saw a vastly different fighter. But, you know, just seeing him against his contemporaries from other weight classes, well, you realise he's not that big. And I think that's interesting when you're trying to evaluate him as a heavyweight. I'd never thought that the hypothetical matchup was Fedor versus modern UFC heavyweight champions. You know, maybe Stipe would be interesting. I think certainly if you're looking at him against someone like Francis Ngannou, it's tough. Just too big. You say, oh, Holman Chau was big. Zuluzino was big. Brett Rogers was big. Come on now. Big and good is what I mean. But of course, if you're rating Fedor as a heavyweight great, you do have to compare him to heavyweights. But certainly, he's kind of in this kind of weird... I guess the fighter I compare him to is Rocky Marciano. Don't rank... It's this really weird, anomalous fighter where the heavyweight rankings don't really matter. But, like, by virtue of being a heavyweight and fighting who he did at heavyweight, almost has, like, more of a pound-for-pound ranking. Let me try and explain myself better here. If a heavyweight isn't in the top 10 heavyweights, then certainly you're not going to rank him over other heavyweights as a pound-for-pound fighter because, you know, you're based on your contemporaries. There isn't that sort of weight-hopping thing that's important in that regard. But, you know, Rocky Marciano didn't really beat great heavyweights, but he beat some like, sort of great pound-for-pounders. You know, beating Ezra Charles a couple of times is important. Jersey Joe Walcott, whilst definitely a peripherally great heavyweight and certainly great to look at, not really got the size of something that you would sort of that you would want for someone as a great heavyweight scalp. Fedor, you know, is beating heavyweights whilst really being a bit of a podgy light heavyweight. Certainly not in his absolute prime, but for some of his time. I mean, Ryan Bader looks bigger than him. He's a former light heavyweight, and he hasn't exactly got massive since his 205 days. Always thought that the point I make is that Fedor versus John Jones was the big hypothetical. But when you look at Fedor, you just wonder, you know, I think Alex Pereira will look massive compared to him. Not that big a guy. And I think that's important when you evaluate how good he was at heavyweight for that amount of time. That's the point I'm trying to make. Okay, you might not favourably pick him against some of the great heavyweights that have come after him. Like Cain Velasquez, obviously you give Fedor like a puncher's chance, and but you just think maybe he might get grounded and stifled and battered. Ngannou might just bop him, you know. But when you're ranking him as a great heavyweight, you're also taking into account the fact that he did it as, you know, not the biggest guy. That's important. It's kind of like pound-for-pound credentials as a heavyweight, which is rare, obviously. It's kind of like Sam Langford, great heavyweight, but you also take into account that he was smaller than a lot of his peers. So yeah, tangent complete, but essentially I have made the case before that Fedor is still the greatest heavyweight of all time. And as I say, given who he beat, how he beat him, one of the great pound-for-pound fighters. Now, when you look at ranking greats, I don't just say, you know, who did he beat, how did he beat him, and when did he beat him, but that how did they beat him? That's important when you're ranking pound-for-pound greats. And I think, you know, with Fedor, you know, to jump into a grappler's wheelhouse and beat him, to take on a great striker and beat him in striking, this is what's really important. It is those Nogueira and Crocott fights that are so important. Yes, Mark Coleman's passed his best, but also pretty awful top control guy, and Fedor's tapping him off his bay. You know, this is impressive. No one's going to think Ogawa is all that great at MMA, but when Olympic judoka gets thrown with a counter throw by the Russian sambist, just shows you, you know, Fedor was good at beating you, whatever your skill, in your skill. That's what I find so amazing. Still breathtaking to this day. That's important for me when evaluating how great a fighter is. Let's just look at, you know, the composite parts and make up Fedor Emelianenko as a fighter. Ridiculously fast hands, brutal puncher. I think it took people a while to realise how powerful a puncher Fedor was, because, you know, when he took the soccer kicks out, suddenly he had to start relying on the punching more. But, you know, even when you think of that, you know, think of a great soccer kick performance, say the Gary Goodridge one. You see them punches he sends into the body, and they sound like someone getting run over. Like, ludicrous amount of punching power and torque, and it's just a pure hand speed for such a big fella. Really, really ridiculous stuff. So resilient, whether it was in grappling situations, whether it was getting clipped by Fujita, and coming back. It's just that split second you see where he realises his limitations and steadies himself. His body's given up on him, but Fedor's head is still clear. Just a great trait on a fighter. Whether it's waiting out Mark Hunt's Americana attempt, you know, whether it's, and I've got to mention it, of course, probably, are we saying this like most iconic moment in the history of mixed martial arts, where Randleman dumps him on his head? Is that the most iconic moment in mixed martial arts history? It's definitely got a claim for it. I think Joe Saldo running into the crowd after kneeing Chad Mendes. I think of Conor McGregor knocking out Joe Saldo as well. Is there a John Jones moment? Is there a GSP moment? those are just, you know, great fighters. You know, certainly a fight we're going to be talking about later, that might provide one of those moments. But Fedor getting dumped on his head by Randleman, given what transpired afterwards, it's got to be up there. I've said before about, you know, separating good from great, and, you know, great, there's got to be some sort of narrative, there's got to be something else there, you know. That Randleman performance, I know you might, a newer fan might go, oh, maybe someone who's listening to this podcast, more of a boxing guy, might look at it and go, oh, who's this Randleman, look him up and see how many losses he's got, and go, well, ain't that impressive, and, you know, he's coming off losses and blah 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 blah. Wow, he's coming off annihilating Krokop. He's probably, if not, I'd say Yoel Romero, but certainly Randleman has a case of being, to this day, Deontay Wilder insert, to this day, the greatest athlete in the history of mixed martial arts. And, you know, Randleman hot and cold, yes. How much was that was due to Japanese influence in Pride, I don't know, but certainly there are some blatant losses that are clear. There's nothing wrong with them. But he had a lot of talent. And that win for Fedor was very, very impressive, given the fact that Randleman was coming off the best win and performance of his career against Mirko Krokop. So yeah, these are all moments that just make Fedor so compelling as a fighter. And when I think about what he means to me as a fighter, you know, I've said before, you know, I got into MMA in about 1999 in terms of my first exposure to mixed martial arts and being a fan of it and reading about it. I would read about, you know, K1 and Pride in the sort of pro wrestling mags, like Power Slam, for instance, that let us all know that pro wrestling was fake. And they would cover MMA as well. Meltzer's always covered MMA since the 90s as well, because they sort of go hand in hand. More on that on other shows. But, you know, that's a fact. So that's when I first got into it. That's when I first became compelled with it. But certainly outside of UFC and some Heroes events and the odd Pride event, I didn't get into MMA in terms of knowing, obviously I knew Fedor Emelianenko was, but I wasn't a massive fan of his till probably near the tail end of Pride, maybe 2005. Certainly didn't see the Randleman fight live. We didn't. It was difficult back then. You'd get streams if you were lucky after the fact. I mean, torrents, not streams, torrents. DVD trading, that sort of thing. But, you know, definitely didn't get to see Fedor in his, you know, bang in his prime. That was in my sort of mid-teen years, so I was talking sort of, what, 2002, so sort of 14 to 16, that's when Fedor was banging his prime in Pride. Got to see some of it, sure. The Affliction days, great. Strikeforce, less great, but Brett Rogers was a banger, you know. And it's a shame he never got the Lesnar fight. I think that would even make Fedor an even bigger legend, or actually, given the time it took place, might actually be a really vital loss. You know, it was such a big event. That's the difference between losing a Brock Lesnar and losing a Bigfoot like he did. You know, losing a Bigfoot, yeah, it's bad, but you can kind of, you just sort of draw a line under it. It's not a massive event like losing a Brock Lesnar would have been. But yeah, you know, that's what Fedor meant to me at that time. I was, you know, sort of into him, got to see some of him, but didn't get to see all of his prime. But then you go into the back catalogue, probably got into the back catalogue about 2007, 2008, something like that. You know, once it was just easier to buy like a DVD career set, that's what you could do then. You didn't go on YouTube, you'd see clips on YouTube, absolutely, but you'd go and buy DVD box sets from some fella online, and you'd PayPal over your money, they turn up, and you just go in this back catalogue. There was Rings, there was Pride, there was Inoki Bunmiye, there was all this stuff. And you just watch it and see this guy and go, I've never seen a fighting machine like this. There's something about Fedor Emelianenko in his prime. These kind of cat-like reflexes, his ability to turn a fight in his head in a split second. It's a real rare, rare thing. You'd think, given all the mixed martial artists we'd seen now, that we'd see something more impressive. But there's something about a big fella like that doing it to bigger fellas. There's something about like the Ferd Nogueira fight when he's just dumping him on his ass on the regular, just chucking him around. Something about that. It's something about him drawing out Krokop's leads, defending his kicks and countering him, pushing him back to the ropes. There's something about Fedor being able to jump into Nogueira's guard in the first fight, pound away. There's something about him just walking up Zulazino, just twatting him and battling him in 20 seconds. You know, there's something about him walking up Hongman Choi and fucking tapping him with that armbar. There's just something about it. Yes, okay. It's like that meme online where you show, you know, Hill, no reaction. Hill in Japan. Oh my God. It's something about the whole, as I spoke about on the podcast many times before, regarding, you know, the whole sort of pomp and circumstance, I suppose, if that's the right term, but of Japanese combat sports, that elevates somewhat. Yes, there is. It makes it somewhat cooler. The fact Fedor's doing it on such a big stage is just sort of testament to his quality as a fighter. So yeah, if I don't think Fedor's maybe the best head-to-head heavyweight of all time, the fact that he was so head-to-head, sort of impenetrable against who he did fight, that's enough for me. Yes, he will be overtaken by heavyweights, and he already has been to some extent. But it's that great about him that's hard to put into words. I hope I'm encapsulating that. But there's a sign about a prime Fedor Emelianenko as a fighter. There really is. I guess, you know, Ali fans would have said they weren't that sold on Joe Lewis's concrete feet when they watched tape of him. But you watch Joe Lewis, you go, that's the greatest puncher of all time right there. With Fedor Emelianenko, there's a sign about him as a mixed martial artist. His kind of all-terrain style. And I'm sure people will say, well, you know, give me a controlling wrestler any day. But, you know, it's just something about him. I don't know. It's hard to put into words. It's not just bias or fandom. It's just you watch him and just moves in a certain way, just does things in a certain way, just lets his hands go in a certain way, sweeps people a certain way, taps people a certain way. It's just there's this kind of innate killer instinct in him that was just so brilliant to watch. And I think it's that killer instinct matched with how sort of stoic his appearance was that made him such a compelling and easy to like fighter. I guess if I'm trying to sort of talk my feelings out, trying to pinpoint why I love Fedor so much, I guess that's why. But I did write an essay on Fedor a couple of years back for a site I used to write for called thefightsite.com. So if you just search Kyle McLaughlin Fedor or Kyle Fedor Fight Site, something like that. I mean, the good man in me could just drop the link in the description. I guess I should do that. You know, send some traffic over there. But just so you can sort of see, for the uninitiated, why Fedor's career was so important. And for those that are already fans of his, maybe get to revel in those moments one more time with me. And I'm not associated with that site anymore. Don't make any money from the traffic or anything. It's just a case of, you know, let's just get to enjoy how important Fedor was in his prime. Because what we saw this weekend and what we've been seeing for a while, yeah, that's not Fedor Emelianenko that I know and love. That's not why we love him. But then, moment of the year in the last, not this awards, but the first ever awards on Combat Chronicles, went to Fedor when he smashed Tim Johnson, because there's something about Fedor. It's just so important to an integral moment in mixed martial arts history. So, yeah, it's fandom, it's bias, it's love, but also there's a reason for that. And there was a time where, you know, when was the last time the heavyweight champion was the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world? But I really do think that the best Fedor that we ever saw, he was the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world. He was one of the best mixed martial artists I've ever seen. Even given the fact we're, you know, we're approaching 20 years now since his absolute pinnacle. Man, it's just something about that guy. And shame to see him go out. It's quite weird, actually. So he only had seven. I would have swore he had more than seven losses in total. But 40 wins, 16 knockouts, 15 submissions, only 9 decision wins in, you know, 20-odd years of competition. That shows you what a finisher he was. 7 losses, 6 knockouts, 1 submission, famously for Doom. That's one guard he didn't want to leap into, but that's who Fedor was. But certainly, let's not always look into the past, as the president of MMA is still absolutely fucking stonking. Biggest fight of the year coming up this weekend, and I'm not going to be able to watch it live, but I can certainly preview it for you guys after this.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
UFC 284, Islam Makhachev, lightweight champion, 155 pounds, fighting Alexander Volkanovski, the featherweight champion, 145 pounds, for the former's 155 pound lightweight championship. That was a mouthful, and I could have explained that better, but alas, here we are. What an absolute banger of a fight this is, and there's lots to talk about because it might not be a banger of a fight, it might be absolutely fucking horrible to watch. I guess it all comes down to, do you actually think that it's a winnable fight for Volkanovski? Because, you know, you got to praise him for going for it. You know, he's a significantly smaller guy. He looks it. That's in a non-nuanced way of looking at it, which is, you know, Makhachev is a very stifling top grappler. And essentially, he's a lot bigger than Volkanovski. He's going to be... He looks like, in the lead-up when they stood next to each other, I thought, yeah, you know, Volkanovski won't be too small. But, you know, he's not the tallest. He's a stocky, strong little... 145 pounder, not the tallest guy. Again, as I said earlier, height ain't everything, but not the tallest guy. A lot of people say, well, he used to be 220 pounds, he's a big fella. Makhachev will be cutting from probably 185, 190, I imagine, or, you know, coming down from that sort of weight. It's going to be massive on the night. He looks pretty darn big at lightweight against lightweights. If you consider another former 145 pounder, but a guy that always struggled to make it in Oliveira, the sort of width difference was really obvious to see. It was a really discernible difference, and there were certain threats that we thought Oliveira had going into that fight that just didn't really play out for him, that Volkanovski doesn't really show. He's a very scrambly guy, but he's not really he's got no danger whatsoever from the bottom. It could be a case of, you know, he needs to survive, but can he thrive? And it might well be a fight, it can go one of three ways, in my opinion. Makhachev blankets him for five rounds. Makhachev blankets him and actually fucking pulverises him and taps him or batters him. Just too big. Or third, Volkanovski is able to counter what Makhachev does well, and he's so much better at what he does well, he can win. So it's either depressing, really depressing, or amazing. Depending on who you're a fan of. But I think, you know, we're looking at great fighters. It'd be great to see Volkanovski win a title in a second weight class, and being a smaller guy and a fighting champion, be excellent to see him overcome a style which is not proven impossible to beat, but nowadays, in terms of the current MMA meta, I think people kind of see that, you know, the whole Caucasus wrestler, Russian style, it's kind of, you know, a lot of wrist rides and dangerous sort of top grappling followed by pulverizing ground and pound is kind of the meta, which is, it's not the full meta of current MMA, but certainly in terms of styles which seem impervious to other styles, it's probably the closest we've seen. Certainly at lightweight, you know, there are obviously exceptions to the rule. We see people getting banged out left, right, and centre all the time. It's not like Makhachev hasn't been beaten, but certainly in terms of, you know, if we see the guys that are top guys at lightweight that have smashed all the other guys at lightweight, you know, no one's really come close to Khabib and Makhachev in recent times. And, you know, given the fact that Oliveira dusted off of Khabib's opponents so easily, you thought, oh, here we go, here's a change, and then they just go down, here's another guy, and just gets absolutely rinsed ASAP, and suddenly doesn't look like one of the greatest lightweights of all time that he did in that amazing prime run. Styles make fights, but these guys, they know what they're doing. They're dangerous to fight, they're horrible to fight, and they're just, you know, they're able to maximise their strengths really, really well. The question is, can Volkanovski minimise what Makhachev does well? And, you know, I'm no grappling expert, you know, just sort of looking at, you know, I just kind of look at what they've done in other fights, and, you know, in terms of breaking it down, and in terms of, you know, the X's and O's of the grappling, not great at that. I'll just look at how other guys have competed. That's how I sort of judge the grappling. I'm not that great in that regard. You guys know that. I'm always the first to admit it. But, you know, I look at other guys who have managed to wrestle Volkanovski, and I see guys that have managed to counteract what Makhachev does. And I just don't see that Volkanovski can really do anything. I mean, there are people writing about it in far more detail than I am. If you check out Miguel Klass on Twitter, I've shared his thread, and a mate of mine Twitter account, if you're not sure, it's a mate called William, but the account's called Good Bad Well, at Good Bad Well, Jiu-Jitsu Black Belt, and you know, has broken this down with a fantastic article called Just Stand Up, What Alexander Volkanovski Has to Do to Beat Islam Makhachev. And with Makhachev, you know, he's not Habib. That was my observation already. Habib is a shark. You know, he just grab hold of you. Immense athlete. Would just take no qualms whatsoever. Grabbing you in the most minimal chance possible. He's on top of you. He's tapping you. It's over. Makhachev, you know, he does take his time. He would prefer to ride you out. He would prefer for you to make a mistake. That's what's really brilliantly encapsulated in this article, which says, you know, Volkanovski can... by keep moving, you know, and elevate Makhachev whenever he can, you know, not give him any second to think. He can actually start tiring him out and actually potentially put himself in a better chance to succeed. Now, on the feet, which I am more comfortable analysing, it's a wash in my opinion. Makhachev is awkward and has improved in some regard, but he is still quite basic. He is quite sloppy. Now, as I've said many times on this podcast, awkward, unorthodox opponents can actually create havoc for sort of textbook strikers. Now, I would say that was a real thing that could give Volkanovski issues, but we've seen Volkanovski adapt to Holloway, changing levels on him and changing tempo of shots and catching him off guard. He's now figured that out. Makhachev's just going to bull rush in. That's what he does. He creates collisions, he creates chaos, and then tries to catch you in a grappling situation, get you down. You know, Volkanovski, in terms of pivoting out and walking him in the shots, that's his domain. He's going to be able to dominate in that regard. It really is a stylistic clash of, can Volkanovski do that enough? And I don't think he can. I really do think, regardless of these sharper, astute grappling minds, pointing out that Volkanovski actually has a legitimate chance to cause Makhachev problems, and is definitely, he's got the IQ, but I say it's not too nuanced, but I think Makhachev's just too big. I think it's a hard style for most people to overcome outside of clobbering him with a big shot. And there's another inherent problem for Volkanovski. He's not a big puncher, not a big striker. Now, of course, tainted a little bit by the fact that we've mainly seen him fight, you know, a guy that probably has got the greatest chin in the history of mixed martial arts, Max Holloway. Make anyone not look like a big banger. But also, it took a lot of artillery to get someone like Korean Zombie, who's past his best. Certainly in terms of if Volkanovski is on top of guys, he can rain down, he's a massive banger. Don't think he's really going to get in those sort of positions against Makhachev. But, you know, can Volkanovski sweep? Can he keep Makhachev moving? Can he keep him guessing? Can he make Makhachev fight in a way that he doesn't want to? Habib loves a scramble. Any opportunity whatsoever, he's going to grab hold of you, he's going to grab a neck, he's going to grab an arm. Just constantly advance a position. Makhachev, not so much in that regard. So Volkanovski's got to keep moving and got to hope that in doing that he doesn't get tired. I mean, we know Volk's got an amazing gas tank, we do, but that's when he gets to dictate fights on his terms usually. I just think Makhachev's too big. Is that not analysis? It's not really. It's kind of the equivalent to say, well, a punch is chance, but based on what I've seen, you look at, say, the Brian, I'm trying to think of an example here. You look at the terrible positions Volkanovski was in against Brian Ortega, but just feel Ortega's a little bit flakier, really. It feels like a flakier fighter to me than Makhachev does. There is absolutely a chance that once things don't go Makhachev's way, he starts to fall a bit. There is a chance. There are fights where I don't think he's looked quite as good. This run of stoppage after stoppage is not them. So I really just don't see how Volkanovski is going to do it. I don't think he's going to get, you know, whomped. But I do think Makhachev will win a wide decision with a couple of 10-8s in there. And I just don't think Volkanovski is going to do what he does enough. And I think in those moments that he does, he's going to struggle to really gain Makhachev's respect. I mean, it's basically like a decent sized 145 pounder fighting an okay sized 170 pounder. I think that's important. Although, you know, we always have, like, say, Patricio Pitbull banging out a Michael Chandler as an example. You know, Chandler has faced bigger punches and survived. Pitbull is basically a guy who can cut to bantamweight fighting a guy who would be fine at 170 or was certainly a strong 155 pounder. So let's not act like there's no precedence for it whatsoever. Volk could lead Makhachev into a shot and catch him with something good and bang him out. As I say, it's not like he doesn't hit at all. I just don't think he's a... If he was an actual, like, genuine knockout punch at 145, I'm thinking, yeah, you know, he can walk him in at certain... He's got a chance. But I just think the percentages of being able to maintain what Volk does well, minimise what Makhachev does well, and essentially that, you know, I don't think Volk can do what he does well for long enough, and I think he's going to struggle to stop Makhachev doing what he does well for long enough. It really is as simple as that. But, you know, given the fact that Makhachev was it with a flash knockdown from Martins all those years ago, and, you know, knockout or not, you know, he got caught staggering in, dropped on his ass, it got flat on his back, stopped quickly. Whether you think it was fair or not, I just don't think that's not cause for me to go, well, you know, Volk could catch him. Again, you know, punch's chance is less of a... It's even less of analysis than he's too big, he's too strong. But I could see Makhachev just sort of, with the wrist rides and that, just putting Volk in horrible situations. I've seen it recently. We saw the Bader Fedor Emelianenko. Trayvon Coker was on the podcast the other week. He suffered it in his fight. It's just a fucking horrible position to be in, and I just think that Volk's going to struggle to move, even with his hips, and even with how scrambly he is, and even how well prepared he is, and the fact that I think he is a better fighter than Makhachev, in a pound-for-pound sense, and just in terms of all-round skill set sense, I think Volkanovski is actually... I spoke about Fedor earlier, about this sort of essence that he had as a fighter, this aura he had as a fighter. I think Volkanovski's got it. I think Volkanovski's the most complete fighter I've ever seen in the history of mixed martial arts. Now, make myself look a cunt, because I probably said that at Piotr Jan at one point, but, you know, in subsequent fights, maybe he hasn't got the IQ I would have hoped for that skill set. Volkanovski's got the IQ, you know. That's what Volk's got. He's got the all-round skill set, plus the fact he's a fucking genius in the cage. But, you know, I just don't think it's a good stylistic matchup for him. If he wins, he's the greatest of all time without a shadow of a doubt. With a good performance and, you know, a close one, he can make that claim too. I think he's already up there in terms of, you know, I think he's the greatest 145 pounder now. I'm willing to say that, even over Jose Aldo, and people won't consider that blasphemous, but pretty much agree it. Aldo's still higher as a pound for pound fighter due to his second career at 135. Going off on a tangent again, guys, but that's what we do here. But for me, I just don't see Volkanovski doing it. It's not even Sanders hedging. It really is genuinely, like, I look at him and I go, I'm glad they're making it. I think it's an interesting fight to make as a pound for pound super fight between two champions. I think certainly Makhachev being a more dominant champion would make it more feasible. I mean, Dana White didn't remember his name the other day. I think that he's not really, outside of a small contingent of fans, not really caught on yet. It's not the same as, say, if Oliveira had beaten him. Suddenly you've got this mainstay of the UFC, guy who's beating Gaethje, Poirier and Makhachev, fighting a guy, and they're a bit closer in terms of weight, where Oliveira used to fight 145. Then Volkanovski Oliveira, that's the fucking fight. That's a big, huge fight. But, you know, at the end of the day, Makhachev beat him well. Clearly the best 155 pound in the world right now, outside of someone random coming over from ACA and battering him. He's clearly the best 155 pound in the world. He hasn't got the resume to back it up. He just beat the number one in the division. He's the heir apparent to the greatest lightweight of all time in Khabib Nurmagomedov, who won't be in his corner, which might be a deciding factor. Let's see. I would think that Khabib's pretty confident, knowing he doesn't have to be there. Otherwise, he would have made one last appearance. But, yeah, for me, you know, Makhachev will be fine. And I think Volkanovski's going to be... He's the one with the uphill battle. Size is important when it's a massive 155-pounder versus a, you know, a good-sized 145-pounder. I don't think necessarily that suddenly liberating himself of a weight cut is going to make Volk hit harder. And, you know, I don't think he's necessarily going to be that much faster than Makhachev, then makes that much of a difference. I think his craft is super important. It really is as simple as, I don't think he'll be able to do what he needs to be able to do. It's really as simple as that. If you want to read more nuanced discussion on the grappling side of things, which I found really useful in making my prediction, only really backed up what I already thought. As I say, I'll drop them links in the comments on this description. Make your own mind up. But one thing's for sure, I will be returning to the podcast, to the Patreon podcast, with all my thoughts on that card, because there's a couple of bangers on that. Pretty shit card overall, but there's a couple of really intriguing fights on there. I'll be dropping out of the Patreon Sunday evening. I'm away this weekend, but I will get back, watch the fights. Sadly, can't watch it live, which is crazy considering we're running a Combat Chronicles podcast over here. But the fact of the matter is, you know, sometimes you just got to have a life, and I end up missing. It's crazy. I'm away for this one, and I'm away for fucking Edwards Usman 3 as well. Like, I never do anything. Suddenly, I start having a life, and I'm missing the biggest cards of the year. Didn't do fuck all when Derek Lewis fought fucking Spivak, but you know, when the biggest fight of the year is taking place, I'm nowhere to be seen. But I will get back as soon as I can. I'll watch the fights and upload them to the Patreon, my thoughts this Sunday. I'm pretty sure that the Volk Makhachev fight is going to be pretty depressing. As a Volkanovski fan, don't dislike Islam by any means. I think he's an interesting fighter. He's he's impressed me with his improvements, and a legitimate champ. And people afterwards go, Volk's too small. And no, this will be a fucking serious, legit win to beat the best pound-for-pound fighter in the sport. Weight be damned. So if you want to hear my thoughts on that, check out the Patreon, www.patreon.com/Combat Chronicles. Until next time, peace out.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.